Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bradford Show. That's my open. That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hit Bradford. That's my open. I'm waiting for you to justify your stupid opinion. Bradford Show. That's delicious. Boom sauce. The t-shirts are in. The t-shirts are in. And the hats and the beer and the people. So welcome to the Bradford Show. We have John Tomasi. We have Nick Fryer. We have Ian Brown, pitcher Nick, of course. First baseman writer Ian and John Tomasi. So
3-point shooter.
We're here. And so I want to go around the room. First of all, thank you for all being here. Thank you for wearing the t-shirt. Just in case people don't know. We have on the front, Bradford Show. Thank you. Lord Hobo Brewing Company. Boom sauce. So, look at that. Ian's got it on. Nick is wearing his extra small.
It's a medium. I fit in a medium. It's perfect.
I
try and blend the tight. Supposed to wear them.
Yeah, no.
Not triple XL when you're an XL.
No, not happening. Anyway, so welcome back to the Bradford Show. And so I want to go around the room first off, and I want to ask each of you your favorite Bradford Show episode from the month of September. John?
The one that started with Boom Sauce.
Okay. Nick?
The Brazier one.
Okay. Ian?
Boom Sauce.
It was a trick question. There was not one in September. And the reason why we didn't have one in September was because we were waiting for the t-shirts.
And
the t-shirts have arrived. The t-shirts have arrived. And you know what else has arrived, guys? The postseason baseball. Yay.
Finally.
I mean, come
Boom
on.
Sauce.
Boom Sauce. I mean, come
Boom
on.
Sauce.
Okay, we don't. Okay, yes. Yes, indeed. Boom Sauce.
I think I should get some credit, by the way, for driving over to Woburn to their beautiful, new, not yet opened, renovated tap
which
room at Lord
Oak. It will also where the soon to be named Bradford Show Studios will be.
I believe that, yeah.
We all lamps included?
Well, excuse me?
Lava lamps included?
The whole thing. Okay. Everything about it. The Joe Kelly statue, the Hall of Fame for all the Bradford Show participants. Ryan Brazier might be up there. I think the Ryan Brazier was the last. Who said Ryan Brazier?
I thought that was September.
Yes.
Nick's an avid listener.
Well, you aren't? What are you doing here if you're not? You're just here. You're literally here for the free t-shirts and potentially the beer. So anyway, so we are here for the postseason, and we were going to do one of these podcasts until the postseason rolled around. So we wanted to. The postseason's here. The t-shirts are here, and we also have a very spacious studio, an area here. This isn't doing the podcast in the dugout. Like I have been doing with Nathan Evaldi and Ryan Brazier.
Or at random restaurants.
Betts or at random restaurants with Alex Speer. No, this is next level. Like you said, there is a reason why we waited to do the next one. This is episode, I don't know, I would have to check, but it's episode a lot. And there was a reason, because it's the postseason. So we're on our way. We're on our way. And so I want to start off. Where do you guys want to start with the postseason stuff?
Who are they going to play? First of all, when are people hearing this? Well, the game will
they're going to hear it before. They're going to hear it before the whole ball of wax start. But
So who are they going to play? Who do you want to see them play?
I don't care who they play.
You don't care?
I hate that question. It's a stupid question.
It's not a stupid question.
Like, who do you want them to play?
You want them to play the Yankees,
who
right?
Will they play?
Yes.
No, I don't want them to play the Yankees. Why?
From entertainment for entertainment.
Yeah, why?
Yeah, see, he says a dumb question, but now we're arguing about it.
Well, by me saying it was a dumb question, then you get the argument going.
Will play the Yankees. I'm making a guarantee.
Yeah, there's no way. Yes, it's like Colorado. Colorado now has to go to. They went to Chicago. No, they went to L.A., and now they have to go to Chicago.
Yeah, they're done.
They have no chance.
They're going against John Lester.
And when you listen to this, and they actually win, forget about
it. The Rockies have no chance. The Cubs are reeling, man. They just blew it to the Brewers. I know they still have the second best
Cubs
record.
Cubs are reeling. They lost one game.
Two.
They blew the lead that they had on the Brewers.
Yeah, they were up five with like
they
2 weeks left.
What was it? They lost two out of three to the Pirates or three out of
They're
four?
They're resilient.
Two words.
They're
not John resilient. Lester.
By the way, this is episode 93. I just checked.
Is it? Yes. Episode what? 93?
93.
Ooh. Nick is your biggest fan.
Although I would check that because someone said they put football audio in the pod, my
based
podcast.
Based on what
area.
The last one was, it was episode
which was Ryan Brazier?
The incredible Ryan Brazier story.
It was an incredible Ryan Brazier story, and I felt like we were out ahead of the Ryan Brazier story in the podcast.
Everybody wrote it after that.
I feel like they kind of did, right? Yeah. All right, sure. Why not? Anyway, that voice, I want people to get acclimated to the voices. Ian Brown, say hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
At Ian Brown of MLB.com. Nick Fryer, Pitcher Nick. You know Pitcher Nick.
Hello, hello, hello.
All right, and John Tomasi. All right, there
they
we
know,
go.
They know me from
educational films, Paint Chips, Deadly, Delicious but Deadly.
Delicious and deadly.
And deadly. So John wants to start out, who do you want him to play? Okay, go around the room.
You know what? It's your show, and we've tackled that. I'd prefer that they play the Yankees for the storyline purposes of it. The Oakland's boring, and you want them. I want them to go through, you know, New York, Houston or Cleveland, and then like L.A. or the Cubs, and have that just.
Well,
be,
I don't
like,
think you got
to
worry about it. I honestly,
run.
After the A's, you don't have to worry about the storyline for any of these teams.
No, but the Yankees haven't played them since 2004 in the postseason. Yeah, so Rob's rolling his eyes, but I mean. That's
what was the year that Ramon Martinez started a game against the Yankees in playoffs?
That was 1999.
The baseball historian, Ian Brown. Screw Gordon Eaves. You should be the Red Sox historian.
Careful.
Honest to God. I'm saying to you to Ian Brown. I'm looking
at
had you.
One too many hobo lives.
I don't want to take Gordon's job from him. So.
Why?
Just yet. Not just yet.
It's not my style.
Okay. All right. Whatever. If
he ever retires, though, I would consider that.
Would you really? Would you do that if Gordon retires and he's fairly old, so it might be any year now?
like in his 50s, isn't he?
No, he's not even.
He's in his 50s.
I don't know.
Whatever.
Maybe he's 60. He's not that old.
Whoever had,
he'll be around for a while.
10 minutes in argument about Gordon Eaves' age. Hold on, let me stop my watch.
You think he's 67 years old?
67 years old?
No.
Oh, I bet
he's around 60
late
at the
50s
oldest.
Or early
60s. Yeah, I would.
You think he's closer to?
Number.
You think he's closer to 60 than 67? That's what you're saying.
Oh, hell yeah.
He covered the 87 finals.
Yeah.
Because I've seen him in the videos, like, behind Magic. So that was, like, 31 years ago. So you figure he was, like, 20.
But he was just starting out then. Because we've talked to him about that. Yeah, I think he was in his 20s.
Mid to late 50s.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're talking.
Anyway, this is where
but
this is going.
I was more interested in the fact that Ian's is actually interested in that job.
I would love to be a Red Sox historian. I mean, am a Red Sox historian.
Yeah, I mean... I know you're very good at it.
You should be a Celtics historian.
Well, maybe I could do both.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Juan Martinez pitched okay in that game, by the way.
I remember that someone missed a home run by like an inch in center field. So there you go.
Oh,
whatever.
Great call.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
Who was that? Troy O'Leary or someone like that?
I think it was Troy O'Leary.
Okay. I have a great memory. Maybe I should be Red Sox historian. I have no desire to do that. I'll go on the record. You can have it. So anyway, John Tomasi wants the Yankee storyline. That's fine. Nick, who do you want to play?
I would say the Yankees as well because the Red Sox, the A's are the only team that weren't under 500 against the Red Sox this year, I think, right? It was them and the White Sox.
Who, under 500?
Well, the Red Sox
weren't
were
4-2.
Under
500. I played them like two times.
They were 4-2, still? The A's.
Yeah, they're 4-2 still. They did well against them. I know, Manaea is not going to be there, so you don't have to worry about that. But the storyline is the biggest thing there. And I want to see David Price pitch against the Yankees again, even if it's at Fenway Park.
Yeah, well, obviously he's not pitching at Yankee Stadium.
If I'm saying, I mean, it's
Ian, who do you want?
I'd love to see the Yankees because I want to see that Joe Kelly Aaron Judge match.
Oh my goodness,
that's not going to happen.
You mock me about it, John Tomasi. What was the most read thing on our website today?
It was Joe Kelly.
Joe Kelly against Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge. And maybe the at bat was meaningless, but maybe it wasn't.
Maybe it wasn't. Who knows? But there was a reason why I surfaced the Joe Kelly versus Aaron Judge. Why everyone was like, "Yeah, that game doesn't matter on Sunday. Who cares?" Well, there were moments that mattered, Ian. There were moments that mattered.
There's always a moment that
right?
mattered.
Right?
Yeah.
There was.
You look close enough, you'll always find one.
There was the E-Rod. I thought the E-Rod thing was notable, and which we're going to get to in a second because it's going to get into playoff roster talk. But yeah, that matchup is the Joe Kelly versus Aaron Judge is a matchup that would actually matter. And he got him out. I didn't realize that Joe Kelly had only given up 4 home runs this year.
No, I didn't either.
I did not know that.
Oh, you're all welcome for that. So, all right. So everyone wants the Yankees. I want the A's.
Why do you want the A's?
I hate going to New York. I'm sick of going to New York.
You'd rather get on a plane. 6.5 hours.
I kind of would.
Oh, God.
I feel like every time I have to go to Yankee Stadium, it takes 6.5 hours.
Well, that's because you drive.
I know that. But
don't drive.
I'm being like, just like do everything.
Yeah, just take the train. You want to go there? You want to go all the way to Oakland for one game?
If sure.
It ends up being one game.
I don't think you understand.
But if they win, it's just one game.
Here's a little behind the scenes. I'm staying in a $2 million house in Half Moon Bay if they go to Oakland.
Rob remembers 2007 when we went all the way to Anaheim for one game.
That's right.
So it's not because you don't want to go to
the game plan.
He did give you the game plan.
I said that on the air the other day, in case people don't know.
That was tremendous.
Yeah, it was. I'm getting in the elevator, the workout day. Remember, Schilling was throwing like 85. They had won the first two games against the Angels in 07, right?
And he had that walk-off from game
three. Yeah, yeah. So they have the workout day. Schilling does his press conference. I'm getting in the elevator, and he hands me two pieces of paper. I'm like, what? What is this? I look, and it's like their entire game plan for like his game plan. It was written, like handwritten out. It wasn't like it would be now. It's charts and graphs and everything else. It was handwritten game plan. And
JD Martinez style.
It was, so yes. Schilling was the first guy to do the whole diary thing, right?
So what did he want you to do with that game plan?
I don't know. So, I mean, I can't remember. I confide in you more than most.
Yeah,
did I confide in you that night that I set the game plan?
You did.
And I said, I don't know what to do with this.
You told me. Yeah. You called me. I remember
did
that.
Did I? Yeah. I guess I didn't.
I think you used it like afterwards, right?
I did. Yeah. So what I did was I used it to follow along how he pitched. And it was amazing to me. At that time, it seems sort of archaic now because I guess this is what everyone does. You know, if you get to this count, do this. Or you get to this count, do this. But everything he did, like, okay, Vlad Guerrero, 3-2 count, throw fastball high, up and away, whatever. Boom, there it was, 85 miles an hour, strikes him out. So, I don't know.
It was Dana Lavangie's scouting report back then.
It was, and I actually told Lavangie that the other day. He didn't confirm or deny it, but... You know, I believe that it probably was Dana Levin.
Did you save that game plan?
No, because I'm dumb.
You should have looked at the back. It was probably, you know, Supreme Court nominees for George Bush for the final year
Meet
of George
Bush Kavanaugh at bar.
Get blackout drunk.
So anyway, I don't mind going to Oakland for a day. I don't care because, like I said, I have a house lined up.
Oh, glorious. That's right. I forgot about that.
$2 million house in Half Moon Bay. I don't have one of those lined up in New York. I have the Meadowlands, whatever. So anyway, so we've got that established. Now, the next line of questioning is going to be regarding the postseason roster. And I think this is, we've been talking about this for a while. So I think we all agree that there's 9, we know about the whole position player, right?
Yeah, that's the 14 are pretty clear there. Yeah.
Right? The only question is, maybe we'll get back to it, because I don't want to pay off on the tease about the bullpen, but the where Brock Holt is going to play. We'll get back to that.
Remember when Brandon Phillips was going to be
it was great for 2 days.
He had one home run and everyone had him on the postseason.
I mean, we were there. It was my birthday week trip to Atlanta, and we were there. It was like, oh, my goodness, this is crazy. Brandon Phillips isn't going to make the postseason roster, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But that was the best game that anyone has played this year, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, the way he scored on that ball.
If we want to give, like, superlatives, like, for the year.
Most exciting game.
Best game of the was the best game of the year.
He's talking about best individual performance. Mookie hit for the cycle. Now, granted, they lost.
Yeah, Mookie's exactly. game.
I don't care.
Thank you.
I would say Mookie's game in New York tonight. They clinched the division.
That's why I said most exciting. It's a little bit different.
Why?
Why is it different?
It was exciting. It could be most exciting and best.
But it wasn't best. John just said it when he said that Mookie hit for the cycle.
I don't know.
That wasn't a loss, though.
I feel like the Brandon Phillips.
It's baseball.
Like,
it's not basketball.
The two base running plays he had, he made the best defensive play of the game. And then he does the wedding proposal home run like we hadn't seen since Adrian Beltre, which is awesome.
Wedding proposal home run.
Right? It was.
Yeah.
It was like, so I am digging in on that was the best play. That was the best
moment. I think that was their best win of the year for sure.
Think so?
Because they didn't play their whole team and they still won.
Yeah, I guess.
They didn't play their three best players.
The closest I've seen Korda crying. Well, maybe it wasn't. I can't remember. There was like the clincher, maybe. But there has been a couple times, I feel like that one, well, no, not crying, but that one's, he was speechless to that one. Yeah, remember? Yeah. He didn't know what he was talking. He was like, I don't even know what to say. I don't blame him. We were just like, just make Brandon Phillips available because we got to do stories on him.
I might go with that Yankees finale with the crazy walk-off and Chapman and all that stuff just for...
To sweep them in four games. Yeah. Sure.
Which one was that? Anyway.
The sweep of the Yankees with Chapman like a walk-off.
The Mookie fourth inning grand slam.
No.
The last game where they got to Chapman in the ninth.
There are
a bunch of errors.
Sorry, I was watching that from Channel 7.
The Mookie grand slam was against Toronto, by the way.
Was it?
Yeah, that was a J.A. Happ was with Toronto.
See, the Red Sox historian right here.
Seriously.
J. Happ. It's one word.
J. Happ.
You got to get postseason ready.
It's not Blue Jays historian or Yankees historian. It's Red Sox historian.
Let's go. I mean, in fairness, Ian's not great about the future, but he's great about the past.
Ooh.
You said J. Happ. I'm just trying to be honest.
Wow.
Now you know, like 2 minutes ago, you could tell me this is what happened. Two minutes from now, you can't tell me what's going to happen. But I'm asking you now what's going to happen.
Ian drove all the way in here to be insulted.
This is what happens when you step into the torture chamber. This is
step into the ring.
I've had half a beer. Ian, you have nine guys locked in bullpen.
Nine guys.
Nine guys locked into the bullpen, or not into the pitching room.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. You would agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
All right. Two guys.
So the last two are going to be Kelly and Pointer.
Okay, Kelly, Pointer, Nick. Whoa.
Tell us who the first nine are, just so Pointer I can get my head around that.
Well, you know the four starters.
The four starters,
then
Kimbrel.
Then Kimbrel, then...
Frazier, Barnes, Wright.
And Rodriguez.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Got it?
Got it.
All right, Nick, go.
I would say Pointer, and I would rather have Workman, but it's going to be Kelly.
Okay, John, go.
I guess I'll be different, and I'll say Kelly and Workman.
All right, well, I'll be different than all of you, and I'll say Kelly and Hembree,
How do you justify Hembree?
Hembree?
Yeah, well, because he's pitched a little bit better lately.
Yes.
He strikes out guys, and I had Workman, but he...
Why no Pointer? The
other day, because I don't... And I don't know if it matters. The last couple of times he's given up home runs, and I don't know if they think they need a lefty.
Yeah, he's made that clear. He doesn't think he needs a lefty.
Well,
and Hembree,
which I don't necessarily agree with, but I don't know if Pointer's a guy who typically is like, say, okay, here comes a lefty, you're absolutely going to get this lefty out.
And Hembree's a guy who can't pitch well against lefties, too, because of his slider. I remember talking to, Bannister about that earlier in the year.
Workman and Hembree actually have been good against lefties.
What about Brian Johnson? Over
Dark Horse.
Over Pointer, because you figure he could pitch long relief or short relief.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, like, does the Pointer thing make you uneasy at all?
Yeah, what a messed up season. So the guy is sort of like, oh, that feel-good story of spring training. He ends up in the roster early in the year. He disappears for about 4 months.
No, he was documented. He was called up six times.
Yeah, and then...
And he was on the DL once.
Yes. And at the end, suddenly, he's back and talked to make the playoff roster.
Yeah.
It's just kind of crazy.
I don't know if you're familiar with Ryan Brazier's story, but you can listen to episode 93 if you want.
I am.
92.
I'm well versed.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, 92. Or you can listen to episode 93.
This is the Richard Seymour edition.
That's right. That's correct. You're very good at numbers as well. Pointer. So where were you? I can't remember.
I said Workman and Kelly.
Kelly. So we all think Kelly's going to make it?
I'm on the fence.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm totally on the fence.
What did Alex say?
Alex was like so like definitive and like having no margin for error that Kelly's on the roster.
Allowed a run the last two postseasons, right? I mean, one or zero.
In Cleveland, he was really, really good. Like, I think he pitched all three games, and he was really good. I don't know if you knew this. He dominated Mike Napoli. And then last year, I think he gave up some hits, but he didn't give up a run. But it's weird because you have that game in Cleveland a few weeks ago, And it was like, oh my good, that he's that's awesome. It's your strikeout Josh Donaldson and Yonder Alonso with the bases loaded and or two guys on and nobody out, and then you get the last out and you're using changeups and curveballs and blowing Donaldson away with fastballs, and the next time out you walk a couple guys and you give up base runners. And then as we the aforementioned Aaron Judge at bat, which everyone
will, I read all about it today.
So when you read that, so in case people didn't read it, I just cited
impossible,
the,
by the way.
I mean, judging by the page views and lining that up with the New England population, I believe almost everybody read it. But so did you actually read it?
I read some. I glazed
over. Whatever. the point was that one of the guys, when it comes to those guys, it's matchups, right? Like, Kimbrel is who he is. The starters are who they are.
Yeah, Kelly can bring him in.
Rodriguez, So like, these last guys are going to be, can you get this guy out?
And you know how they like to pitch Stanton and Judge is like fastballs up, and
right.
Kelly's now, what are, one of the guys who has that.
Kelly's done well against Judge, not just that at bat, but
I forget what he is. He's pretty good against him.
Yeah, remember he threw that 103 miles an hour last year?
Yeah, but when he gets a double play on Sunday, it was he gets down 2-0 and he gets down 3-1 and comes back with a changeup, a couple changeups and a curveball. And that's the good Joe Kelly. That's like, how does anyone hit this guy? But I come back to, and I'll give Avendrella credit for this when he said it on the radio. He doesn't write anymore, but when he said it on the radio, he said, like, he doesn't give up home runs. And I got to think against the Yankees, because that's the thing. If
that's
the Yankees are going to beat the Red Sox, that's how they're going to beat the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, and I'll go back to, if we go back 15 years, to that 03 postseason where their bullpen was a disaster all year.
Yeah.
And then you get into the postseason, and Embry and Timlin and Williamson, I think, gave up one run
I
in 20 innings.
I stole that the other day, I think. But it was the fifth inning, so no one listened.
Well, I'm here to serve. But the idea being that you had guys with track records who finally lived up to their track records when it mattered. On this bullpen, if I'm betting on something, do I bet on recent performance in games that don't really matter? Or do I bet on track record when I'm at the back of the bullpen? I'm going on track record. At least Kelly has one.
So Kelly said in the quote I had, I got to look it up now, but when I talked to him on Sunday after the game, he's like, I always have come through in the big moments. And, you know, listen, that's not exactly true. But there are some moments, like you said, the playoffs. He came through, and going back to when he started, you remember he started against the Red. Ian, you're going to have to, because you're the guy to remember this.
Yeah.
What did he do?
He started
like game four?
Game three.
Game three of 2013 World Series.
Yeah, he had a pretty good start.
He pitched decently, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what he says is it's something I've done before. It's not like it's going to be new. I feel like I'm in the big pressure situations, I end up coming through. It's something I feel like I thrive on. I feel like I'm throwing the ball good night.
That's the kind of guy you want to have in the playoffs, though, a guy who's confident they can do it, where some of these guys are going to go out there with no track record of coming through in big games, and they're not going to.
Well, the Brazier thing, right? I mean,
he scares me a little bit.
Because he gave up the home run in New York?
Just because he's never, like, what's the biggest moment he's had in his career, even this season?
We know. That's documented. It's in Baltimore in early August.
No, it was in high school.
He said in front of 10,000 fans in Baltimore.
I mean, let's face it, this team didn't face true pressure all year. I mean, they had a big lead, though, the entire stretch run. So we don't know, you know, how these guys are going to handle it when
Nick, who do you think is... do you have confidence in Brazier or anybody?
I have confidence in Brazier, but real quick. Kelly,
go to your notes.
I'm looking at the stats you guys are talking about.
I know. I appreciate you looking that
up. Aaron Judge is 3-for-10 against Kelly this year.
Yes.
Three
strikeouts.
And then, what was that?
Three strikeouts.
And then Kelly in that game against the Red Sox in 13, 5 1/3 innings with 2 earned runs.
Well, that's pretty close. That was like,
no, you're good.
So it wasn't bad. But I actually am confident in Brazier. The rest of the bullpen, though, Wright's the only other guy I'm confident in besides Craig Kimbrel, yeah.
So Kimbrel, Wright, not Brazier, not Barnes.
No, Brazier, yes. I'm confident in Brazier and Wright and Kimbrel.
Barnes looked good on Sunday.
What about Rodriguez? Are you confident in him?
Here's where I'm confident in Rodriguez.
3 out of 4 so far.
Here's where I'm confident in Rodriguez against Chris Davis.
Which Chris Davis?
Yeah, I know, the one who hit 160.
Chris Davis, K
K. Davis.
H-R-I-S.
Yeah.
Davis.
Rob was looking at my MVP ballot the other day.
Seven.
He told me I had it spelled wrong.
Oh, 04. You did. Was I wrong?
No.
Why you'd be embarrassed in front of the national viewing audience. Chris Davis against Erod, 0 for 12, 7 strikeouts. Is that insane?
And by the end of a series,
and by the way, he will no longer be 0 for 12. He will be 1 for 13 with probably a home run because I told Eduardo Rodriguez that fact.
Why would you tell him that?
Yeah, now it's in his head.
I don't care.
I don't care.
I don't play for the team.
I know you don't play for the team, but why? But that's just a dick move. Like you,
what do you mean?
You don't tell a guy his stats. You ask him first. Do you like to know about your stats?
Let's go around the room. John, do you have a problem with me telling him his stats?
No.
Ian?
No.
What are you talking about?
So you guys are all dicks then. I don't know what I'm going to tell you.
Well,
you just don't do that.
This is
the former pitcher.
When the Northwestern media came up to you and said, hey, Nick, you own this guy.
With my teammates.
I understand
you know your stats,
players
not
don't like
stats.
It. I don't care. I mean, that's not my – it's like, it's
again,
like,
that's
it's like
why you're
saying that someone has a no-hitter. I'm going to say he has a no-hitter. It's not my responsibility.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that you said that. That's different. That's just superstitious.
He already knows it.
See, that's what I'm saying. That's different. He doesn't know his stats. Some guys legitimately don't.
He knows his
stats. No, he doesn't.
Because he laughed, and then he said, "Don't say that." And he laughed and walked away.
He laughed because he's like, it's a nervous laugh, Rob. It's not because he knows. Why does he know Chris? Yeah, because you know what? At home, he has it on his wall. I am doing this well against Chris Davis.
Blame me when they're losing Chris Davis in 40 home runs against Eduardo Rodriguez.
Okay.
My point is, it's much like when Joe Kelly, when they played Cleveland. He was like, Mike Napoli was 0 for 5 with 4 strikeouts against him. Guess what happened after I told Joe Kelly was 0 for 5 with 4 strikeouts? He struck him out. Guess what happened?
Kelly's a roll of the dice. He has no idea what the hell's going on out there.
Guess what happened on Sunday?
What?
Literally, the day before the game, I said, you know who you're good against? Brett Gardner. You're like, he's like 0 for 9 with 6 strikeouts against him. You know what happened? He struck him out again.
Oh, did he? That's great. Joe Kelly has no idea what the heck's going on out there. He said it before. Yeah, he has no idea where the ball's going.
You think Rodriguez has any idea like what he's done?
Yes, he does. I think he is a lot softer than Joe Kelly.
All right, so this brings us, it's a good segue to Eduardo Rodriguez.
You're welcome.
Yes. I'm glad you added something. So Eduardo Rodriguez I talked to him the other day and I'm like, I feel like this is after a relief outing. I'm like, I feel like you're going to be, this is when I told him he owned Chris Davis, that you're going to be a guy, that you're actually going to be an important guy. He's like, I feel good in the bullpen, blah, blah, blah. And then that day, was it Saturday? He goes out and he was awful. 3 runs, 4 hits, 2 innings, 2 walks.
Bunch of lefties getting hits.
Yeah.
Off.
When we talk about the job that Cora did, I mean, that what Cora did that day, that clinched my Manager of the Year vote, right? I mean,
you're not allowed to say who you're going to vote for.
I know, but if I say that
I've already been kicked out of the BBWA once. Yeah, we'll do it again.
I'm a rebel. Who knows? Maybe I voted for him, maybe I didn't. But that was something that, let's be honest, I don't think the previous managers would do. I don't think a lot of managers would do. You're talking about leading into the postseason. Most managers are going to err on the side of making guy feel good. And he said basically, like, you sucked.
Yeah, he was.
And he made him pitch the next day.
Yeah, he was obviously upset with his not only his the way he was executing, but his mental focus. I mean, he just didn't think
I noticed that. I don't know why I was paying attention at that point, but there was like they're throwing the ball around. He seemed really loose on the mound.
Yeah, I just don't think he was just too loosey goosey. It was just like, this game doesn't mean anything. And Cora was pissed.
Yeah.
Cora was like, we're counting on you.
Then he goes out and he pitches the inning, which we can agree he would never have pitched that inning, right?
No.
Yeah. And he says after that game that he talked to him that night and said, hey, get your shit together, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things we like about Cora. This is like Barstool, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Anything
I thought
goes.
We could swear on here, Robert.
No, we can, but I'm like we're in the main studio.
We're in the
main studio. It's unheard of.
No, but just the idea that Cora, you know, we've asked for years, a manager just tell it like it is, and if a guy sucks, tell us he sucks. And Cora seems to take that every once in a while, and clearly there's a purpose behind it. He will take it one step farther than you're expecting, you know, and Erod was a perfect example. Like, what did he call the ball that I think it was Gregorius hit? He was like, it was a missile. Like it wasn't, yeah, yeah. It, you know, it wasn't just that he gave up the hit. It was that he gave up a missile, you know, and so there was a reason for him to call him out like that. And it, you know, it seemed like it, the message got through the next day.
Oh, he's totally, his demeanor was different. I mean, he strikes out two guys, and I think that the reason he did that, I think one of the reasons he was so upset was because I do think that he is a huge, like, he's not saying this is our blueprint for the postseason, but I think he is a huge part of whatever they're going to do, right?
He has to be.
Right, well, he's like the Andrew Miller, David Price, you know.
Felix Dubron.
Yeah, Felix Dubron.
2013.
Thank you. I know. Wow. I hear you. No, but you're right. So, but who was the guy in Houston who did it last year, who the starter that ended up being key in the relief?
Charlie Morton?
McCullers.
No, it was McCullers.
Right? Yeah, but there was someone, right?
It was like 20 innings.
There's usually a guy like that, and I feel like they're saying that's the guy, even though he might start.
Well, it could be Stephen Wright, too. I mean, he could.
Yeah,
he
maybe.
He seems like the guy who will. He's not going to blow people away, but you could see him pitching every game.
Well, yeah, let's say that, like, what is one guy on game one and one guy in game two, but clearly he's important. That's one of the reasons I think Corey was so pissed, because he's like, I've been setting this whole thing up. Don't screw it up now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I love what he did.
Yeah. So there you go. Ian Brown, seal of approval.
And Dubron is not a bad. Like,
oh,
if,
no.
If that's the ceiling, like, you will take that,
we go
what
back,
he did in 2013.
Oh, so what was it? What was it, Ian?
Dubron in 13?
Yeah.
I don't think he gave up any runs the whole
one run. Seven innings, one run.
But it was it. Like he had one game in particular.
Game in Detroit. It was game, I think it was game five in Detroit.
Game four. Well, no, wait. They lost that game. Game two, he pitched a scoreless inning. He had two big outings in the World Series, multi-inning outings.
Okay, yeah. So, but he was sort of, and I remember surfacing Dubron, and I don't know if it was you, Ian, who said this the other day when Cora did this, ripped D-Rod, but he said this is the second time he's done it. He did it back in Baltimore,
yeah.
Where he basically said, you know, and I looked up that Baltimore game was in early June, and he was actually, his numbers are okay, but he took 109 pitches to get through five innings.
Painful, yeah.
And Cora after the game, he's like,
he was ripping his pitch mix, right? Wasn't that the whole thing?
No, he was just ripping. He's like, this is ridiculous. You got to get deeper in the games.
Yeah.
And that was as much as he's called out a pitcher to that point, I think. And it was, I think that he understands the personality of this guy, right? Doesn't
he? I mean, that's the one. He understands the personality of all these guys. He knows how to get through to each one of these guys.
I guess.
Except for maybe Kimbrel.
I mean, that's a story unto itself.
Yeah,
like,
so
how
okay.
is that going to unfold?
So, all right, yeah, I will go around the room. Craig Kimbrel, what's going to happen?
He is going to be asked to pitch a multi-inning.
Say, I'm not going in.
He'll say no. No, I mean, he's going to do it, and we'll see how he does. I'm not confident in him going an inning and two-thirds. He's not going to be Keith Foulk in 0-4, you know?
Well, what's his name?
And they might need him to be.
Hader, two innings, right?
No. Yeah, Cubs. Two innings today. Exactly.
Yeah, Nick?
Total confidence in Kimbrel right now.
No, I know you have. But what's he going to do?
He's total confidence, meaning he's going to be fine. He's going to do everything he's asked of, and he's going to succeed every single time.
Wow.
Yep, I believe in him 100%.
What, are you writing the Craig Kimbrel book? What's going on?
I believe in Craig Kimbrel. He's been the best closer in all of baseball over the past however many years.
That's that game against Houston last year that doesn't still bother me.
Nope, it doesn't bother me at all. It was last year. It means nothing.
We need a good fight now.
I would have liked to.
What was that?
I think we need you guys to fight. This is a part of the podcast where you fight.
Oh, okay.
I just would have liked to have seen him get a little bit more of a ramp up if he's going to be doing these four, five, six out saves or whatever. I would have liked to have seen him ramp up to that, which I think Alex Cora wanted to do, and I don't think that Kimbrel
okay,
wanted to do
so,
it.
Okay, so after the game on Sunday, the last game, he'd asked that. Like, it was a legitimate question and said, hey, you know what? You said this was going to happen. It never did. And Cora said we didn't have the opportunity to do it, which, you know.
That's the Terry Francona.
It was spring training at that point.
Sunday was actually the absolute perfect opportunity to do it, right? I mean, you're up eight runs.
You're not playing.
You have a week off.
Drew Pomerantz is pitching the eighth inning instead of Craig Kimbrel. And I actually thought there might be a chance because he had only pitched once since September 21st. I'm like, this is what they're thinking. This is where they're going to drop Kimbrel in for this two-inning outing on the last day of the year. But you know what I think is going to happen? I think he's still going to do that, but I think it's going to be like Tito did with Andrew Miller, which is, like, remember when Andrew Miller, they did that whole thing against the Red Sox?
Game one, fifth inning.
Right, and the Red Sox, ask anybody in the Red Sox dugout or bullpen, they're like, holy shit, what's going on? They had no, that was not a semblance of their scouting report that that was going to happen.
Yeah, but that's a bad scouting report because they in the Indians had no pitchers at that point. They're starting Trevor Bauer. I mean, they had like two starters. So the idea that they were going to turn every game into
a bad scouting report.
No, what I'm saying is the idea that they were going to turn every game into a bullpen game. We knew that going in.
Not to that extent.
No.
That's revisionist history.
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's revisionist.
Who had done that before?
We were surprised that they went that early.
Yeah, he figured maybe seventh.
The idea that Miller was going to pitch two or three innings.
No. But that early. But what was it?
In the fifth inning, though?
No, the fifth was early. But I'm just saying
it was
the idea that. They were going to turn the games over to their bullpen. We knew that going into the series.
Right, but so the narrative, when the Red Sox went into that series, even though it was in Cleveland, the Red Sox, I think around here, people thought...
Everyone thought they
were going to win, right?
Remember the
because
Indians,
the Cleveland didn't have any starters.
Yeah, Indians writer said he would jump in the lake if the Indians won that series.
Yeah, right?
And he did.
So Kluber was hurt.
Did he jump in the lake?
He did, yeah.
Kluber was hurt. He started game two, is that right?
Kluber started game two,
yeah.
And Bauer, like, cut up his hand, so...
Yeah, and I mean, Tomlin is going to game three, but I think Tomlin started game three.
Yeah.
And so... Porcello or Price pitch the first game?
Porcello
pitched the first game. Price pitches the second game. But these both are guys that had decent years. Certainly, like, Porcello won the Cy Young.
Yeah. His teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
Worst start of that whole year.
But you line it up, you say, and this is where the whole world of the playoffs changed. And not only because Andrew Miller did it, was because people, when we go into these series, you can't just say, oh, you have the better starting pitching. It doesn't work that way. Like, if that was the case, Oakland would have zero chance.
Right, but they have the best bullpen right now.
So you think that Kimbrell's going to come into a game in like the fifth or sixth inning?
No,
he doesn't need to.
No, but I think that...
That's why Miller did it for
the
Don't
you
minutes.
Think that there's a possibility that he could come in for two innings, like Hader did against the Cubs?
Why do you guys think that he doesn't want to do it? It's one thing whether or not he can or can't do it. Why does he not want to do it?
Because he's not comfortable.
He's stubborn.
He's very routine-oriented. I mean, look.
No, I understand
they said,
that.
Cora said throughout the entire winter, throughout the entire spring, they're going to use him differently this year. And obviously, he had the weird spring training because of his daughter, and nobody wished that on him.
Of course.
But then it's just he never used him differently. It was the ninth inning pretty much the whole year.
So what was the big problem with the eighth inning this year? Like the eighth inning in general with the bullpen? You didn't have anybody you could turn to consistently, right?
Right. Yeah, you would just have guys for little stretches.
Exactly. So going into the postseason, do you want to rely on Craig Kimbrell to pitch the eighth and ninth inning every single time that you have a save-type situation, you have a tight game?
No.
No, you need to figure out who your eighth inning guy is. So why would you first try and figure out Kimbrell in the eighth and ninth and not try and figure out who your eighth inning guy is?
The whole thing is bizarre because as Craig Kimbrell said in episode 73 of the Brad Foe Show, episode 73, that is correct. Just off the top of my head, he said that basically when that was brought up, said, hey, you know, listen, I'm not coming in the seventh. He said, like, definitively. I mean, this is, I don't know, I forget it was in May or something, but I'm not coming in the seventh, and if I come in the eighth, I'm finishing the ninth. Because there was that perception of you get the high leverage in the seventh and the eighth, and maybe someone else closes in the ninth. And then all we have to go by is at the All-Star game, he said, we've been saving our bullets. We're going to approach it differently in the second half. We've talked. I've had the talk with Alex. We're going to approach it differently. Really not that different. A couple times here and there, but that's it. Mm-hmm. And then you have Cora, when was that? A couple weeks ago, saying on the radio, on WEEI, that, hey, you know what? Now we're going to start doing things different with Kimbrell. And I remember going to, it was at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I went up to Kimbrell when he was coming off the field. Hey, Cora said this on the radio, and his comment was, we'll talk about it as it happens.
Right.
Yeah, but you know what? The other thing you have to factor into this a little bit is Kimbrell's struggles all year. Like, it's all relative because it's him, but he was never fully locked in. Like last year, he was
pretty
unhittable.
Good in September, though.
He was unhittable from But when we're talking about
crazy stretch,
when we're talking about the idea of at some point in the season, Cora talked about it early. He talked about it again at the All-Star break. You never had Kimbrell so dialed in that you felt like you could you know, disrupt a routine. You know what I mean? Like, they had to worry about making sure
true.
He was right for the night.
No, it is true. Like, and even when he came in, it wasn't that good. I remember, like, the eighth inning last year, he was really good when he came in, right? Correct?
Yeah.
Very but this good. Year, there wasn't that feeling of, oh, here comes Craig Kimbrell. He's gonna shut the door down in the eighth, and the game's gonna be over.
Yeah, I mean, he was like otherworldly last season.
But you know that if we talk and we talk about that last game or that last weekend of things that mattered, Erod mattered. Joe Kelly versus Aaron Judge obviously mattered, but Kimbrell, that last outing, honestly, that was one of the best outings that I've seen him have.
Like, coming off one that was abysmal,
right?
Like, you know,
right.
Like right before. And,
but it was like there was more conviction in that outing than I can remember him seeing. You know, you always get him; he's yanking the fastball and he's
the worst.
Not controlling.
Yanking his breaking ball too. But here's the other thing too, guys. Going back to the seventh, eighth inning thing, Rob. If Kimbrell goes and throws the seventh and eighth inning, or if he goes and pulls an Andrew Miller, John, who are you guys putting out there in the ninth inning?
Durbin Feldman.
Okay, that's my point, because you have no one else. I trust not one of these guys on here to pitch in the ninth inning.
You know what, though? I don't look at Kimbrell as, oh, he'll come in and get the three outs in the eighth. It's like, you'll come in with one or two outs in the eighth, and you will finish the game.
Like, but if he comes in the seventh, like Rob brought up, I mean, he's not going to go.
They're not going to do that.
No, they're not
going to do that. Like, physically, yeah. I don't think he can actually handle it.
Like, Torrey would always go to Rivera for the four and five out saves throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I see Kimbrell. Like, you'll use him like that.
Yeah,
I just accept that.
I honestly think that, like, they feel like this is sort of their secret. And it's not a secret because we're talking about it. But don't you feel like there's going to be things that Core is going to do that we aren't.
Yeah, maybe that's why
that he hasn't done in the regular season.
And maybe that's why they babied him so much the last couple of weeks, is because they want him to be as strong as
Absolutely.
Possible.
Yeah, I think so.
Can you believe he had more saves this year than last year? I mean,
no.
he was so much better. No,
they won 108 games.
Well, that's
you know,
true.
I mean,
but he had 42 saves this year and then 35 last year. I mean,
You guys sign him? Make an attempt to sign him?
No.
Okay. Oh, God, no.
Ian?
No, just because of what the cost is going to be.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, with the other four guys
to sign.
Here's what I do. I already wrote what I was going to do.
Sign Joe Kelly to be
Nathan,
the closer.
Nathan Eovaldi. What do you do? So I surfaced the Nathan Eovaldi 4 years, $10 million a year. You can try him out as closer. It doesn't work out. There you go. Everyone wins. He gets a bigger contract than he probably would otherwise, and you might have a closer.
Your company's not going to need a third Tommy John.
No.
Sure.
but Ryan Brazier's going to be sitting there. And then you go sign Zach Britton. Because I think that Zach Britton is a little wild right now, but you get a year away from his injury. There
I
you
don't
go.
Think you need to spend $10 million on a closer.
No,
but either he's a really good closer or an okay starter.
Or he's mediocre at all of the above.
I don't trust Brazier right now as a closer, but if you give him a year to get used to it,
well,
I'd
he's been
that.
A closer like his whole life.
I understand. Well, at the major league level, has he, Rob?
All 42
it's
years.
It's a little
of
different,
his life.
Isn't it? Yeah.
No, he only looks 42.
Yes. Well,
if he's 42, then Gordon Needs is like 78.
Can we do a Zaba search on Gordon, please, before the end of the year? So, all right. Well,
I'm gonna go on the record and just guess that Gordon is 58.
64 years old.
I'm saying 58. I'm going with that as well.
64 years old, according to.
Well, he looks good then.
Wikipedia.
So it's a tie.
Oh, and his birthday. It was just
actually,
his birthday.
It's, you
Happy
lose.
Birthday, Gordon.
He's closer to 67 than he was 60.
Maybe he get this job with like the next 10 years or so.
What did I say?
Ian, I like that.
Yeah,
you absolutely have to do that.
I thought
job.
He was like 58.
Yeah, it was close.
I am going to surface that and make Gordon supremely insecure. Either Ian Brown's going for his job.
Actually, I know who really wants that job, but I'll have to tell you off the air.
Like who's
wow.
at minute 40 of the episode 93?
We gotta take that off the record.
All right.
Stop tape. Stop
so
tape.
Yeah. So we got. I think we've gotten through the bullpen. Who's in the starter for game four?
And it's got Eovaldi against the Yankees and Rodriguez. Against
I think
the
so.
A's.
Right. Rodriguez is really good at Oakland.
He almost had that no hitter there two years ago.
And then the other time he pitched like eight innings, he was really good. I don't think that's a fluke. Pitcher Nick, is that a fluke? You know pitching.
No, I don't think it was a fluke at all. But Erod, I mean, there's a reason that they had him, you know, what is it, four relief appearances? There's a reason why. It's not.
It's because they think they're going to face the Yankees.
Yeah, but you don't just go and turn a guy into a reliever like that down the stretch that early. I mean, they tried it early because they thought
that was the weird thing, is that even though you surfaced that he might start again, because I thought they had gone so far down the road of your reliever that you couldn't come back from it. They think they could. Well, we'll see.
Just because they say that, Rob, doesn't mean that they actually believe it. It's actually the telling the truth.
That's like, who cares? Like, they could say
announced who they're starting in game one? Because they don't want other people to know.
This is game four. It's not game one.
I understand that, but still, they don't want other people to know.
And as Erod told me after I told him that he owned Chris Davis, actually before I told him he owned Chris Davis.
Did he say which Chris Davis?
Maybe. That's true. I'm off the hook. But he did say, he's like, listen, everyone was saying how good I was at Yankee Stadium earlier in the year. And you remember, the game at Yankee Stadium early in the year, he had a no-hitter like into the fifth inning. Now he had thrown like 300 pitches. Yeah. But
I feel like he's thrown there twice since then, though, where he wasn't very good at all.
Yeah, the last time, certainly. So I think we're all in agreement with that.
If you're committing to Erod as a reliever, I would just say he's a reliever, and I wouldn't start going back and forth. I mean, Oakland hits lefties the same as righties, so I don't think that matters. I'm not going to put too much weight into two starts against a totally different roster. I mean, that's a big ballpark, but the A's have sort of figured out how to hit home runs there. I'd leave Erod as a reliever just through.
Maybe Cora's already decided that, but it seems like he's been hedging about it. You know, like when I asked him the other day what the rotation was for the playoffs, he said, you know, Sale game one, Price game two, Porcello game three, and then we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, why not just commit to that?
Well, they don't know if they're going to pitch to have a game four.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't want them thinking that they're not going to sweep.
He's banking on a sweep. So you have also, so we went through the pitching staff. We think Joe Kelly's probably going to be on it. And then I think you guys think Bobby Pointer or whatever.
Maybe. I'm not totally
sure. It shouldn't be Kelly, but it will be Kelly. I just want that for the record.
Oh, okay.
I could totally make a case.
Hold on. Let me type it. There, saved.
I'm the third one to say for the record here tonight, and you're going to give me shit about it over these other two.
Okay. Who else has said for the record?
Ian has said it twice, and John has said it at least once.
Okay.
What's that?
Did I?
For the record?
Maybe you didn't say it, John.
You fight with him?
For the record.
I'm not mad at Ian. I'm mad at you, but whatever.
All right.
Brian Johnson, though, I could talk myself
into
that.
He's a dark horse.
Mm-hmm.
He played more of a role during the season than Pointer. You know, that's the
other
thing.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
but I think they feel like Pointer has more, I don't know, upside stupid in like a five-game series.
Pointer would be the guy.
If they have a 20-game series, is more of upside.
I'd rather see Johnson and Pointer than Pointer and Kelly. Because if things go wrong in a game, you have Johnson there to kind of clean it up.
The one thing about Johnson is that I do feel like he's not afraid to attack hitters. Like he's for a guy who throws an 88-mile-an-hour fastball, he's not afraid.
But he can also clean up a mess, too. Like he can just wear it if you need that. He can be effective in a tight situation. He can go long in extra innings, or if, you know, let's say
you're talking me into Brian Johnson being
the competitor
other guy.
Too, man. He's not one of those guys. Not one of those guys going to sort of shy away from them. He might not have the best stuff.
I'm all in. All right, Joe Kelly, Brian Johnson.
Right. I'd rather see Pointer or Johnson.
Okay. So we have the pitching set, and so as we said, they're taking three catchers. Ian, you asked Cora the question the other day, what are you going to do with the catching situation? And he said on the radio, he'd said the thing about he dropped the, well, you know, they talk about the opener for the pitchers. Yeah. And maybe
he didn't give me that good an answer. Yeah.
No, but what's today? Tuesday, when we meet with him, I'm going to ask him that.
All right.
I'm going to say, so could you foresee a situation like the opener as your catcher? And because he already said on the radio, he'll have to say it again. And so what he's talking about, of course, is starting San Leon and then doing what he did the other day with pinch hitting for him in fifth, which is what he should do. San Leon has to start these games.
Yeah, you saw him do that a couple weeks back. He hit that game when Brock Holt had one of his many big hits.
Even a couple weeks back. He didn't do it for him
that was
like
the
fifth week
inning.
Before.
That
right.
was the fifth inning.
Right. There was a big moment about the week before, exact same situation, and he didn't do it, and it cost them. And then you're right. And he actually cited that on the radio. Good job of remembering that. But we agree that Sandy Leon should start these games, three of them?
Definitely the games with Sale, because obviously Sale is so...
Well, Price has been... He's been as important to Price, maybe even more than Sale.
Yeah.
Right?
If he has two hits in the last month. That's astounding.
I know. So it's like batting a pitcher. It's like you have a pitcher hitting in the catcher spot.
Yeah.
So, a bad pitcher.
But he's a good bunter.
So you need, like, if other guys aren't hitting, it's going to be tough having Leon down at the bottom of the order.
So you don't think he should?
But we've seen it this year when it looked like Cora was going to maybe give a different catcher a different try with a guy.
That is a demerit for Cora, like how he handled Swihart this year.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, you say, they don't have a better option. I mean, Vasquez and Swihart haven't really
been
either.
I was going to give you some of these stats at the end of the podcast, but one of these ones, because I was looking through the year-end stats, so I was looking up pop time. Baseball Savant has best pop time.
Really?
Yeah, so Swihart and Leon are tied for pop time, which is 1.97. Vasquez is way down at 2.06. I mean, who would have ever thought...
They used to always talk about his pop
right.
time.
Who would ever thought that Blake Swihart would be significantly better than Christian
And
Vasquez?
It's not just the numbers, because you watch it, Swihart's got a hose.
Yeah. Right. I mean, well, this is even talking... Yeah, this is like the whole deal. Like,
yeah.
Getting...
I think Veritek's done a hell of a job with Swihart this year.
Looks like Gary Tuck is the best catching instructor in the world. How do we know?
I think Veritek's gotten through to Swihart. You can just tell...
Well, don't you guys think that, like, Swihart, this is the only demerit for Cora?
I would like to see him get more at-bats, because then he'd be in a better groove offensively.
He's an everyday catcher.
He's a pretty good hitter.
I think he's an everyday catcher.
He is, but I understand why he stuck with Leon so much.
Oh, no, but that's not my issue, Nick. Yeah. My issue is, like, him sticking with Vasquez. Even when Vasquez came back and he said... He basically insinuated Swihart had leapfrogged Vasquez on the depth chart, and then that lasted like a couple days.
I think Evan asked one of the better questions of the season when he said to Cora, he said, what does Vasquez give you that Swihart doesn't? And Cora like could not answer the question. He like kind of hemmed and hawed, but he didn't have an answer for him.
It's weird because there isn't. I mean, there isn't. If you, like we're talking pop time and... He clearly isn't as good as offense.
You know what he has? He has a contract. That's the only thing he has. That's why. Yeah,
like a take back on that one.
Yeah.
Well, and so
he'll get traded.
So,
could be his receiving and his pitch selection too. Those are the other things.
I don't think they're good.
You don't think Vasquez?
I don't think Vasquez. No.
Wait a minute.
No.
That's been his thing from day one.
No,
yeah, it was amazing.
It went away.
Yeah, when
he's declining is what Rob's
when
saying.
He struggled under.
No, I'm just talking about the people who like pitched to him.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. People who would have more of a clue than us were down on his game calling.
The other day, like, Cora went out of his way to praise Vasquez. Like, oh, he caught a really good game. I forget which game it was, but it was like he was going out of his way to, like, try to give him some confidence or some positive reinforcement or something.
So does Vasquez get a start?
No.
No.
No, what's the point?
Okay.
I mean, has anybody said that that Swihart's receiving is superior to Vasquez's?
I don't know. I don't know about his receiving.
No, that seems to be the thing that holds.
And blocking balls was a big thing. Right. So anyway, all right. So we believe that Sandy Leon is probably going
to
start, and you know, I think that you have to do that, even though you know,
if there's a certain game though that you need, you feel like you need like an offensive jolt. I could see Swihart starting like midway through the series, or maybe even in the next series. I could see Swihart getting a start.
But Ian, but you look at it and you say, look at the pitchers. Like you get shut out. You get shut out in the first two games. Now you have Porcello, and Porcello up until recently, the only guy that he had thrown to was Sandy Leon, and that's an issue. I mean, I honestly think it's even an issue when you get into the bullpen. Like yesterday, the aforementioned historic at bat Joe Kelly against Aaron Judge, where you know Sandy Leon's catching that. Sandy Leon's calling those pitches. And I think that makes a difference because we know, like, Joe Kelly doesn't call any pitches.
No.
So, yeah.
Too much thinking for him.
Yeah, well, it is. He says that, right?
Some guys just don't want to go up there and think because then they go and mess themselves up.
I mean, Sale doesn't.
Yeah.
Then you have Schilling who would, like, never let a catcher call a pitch.
No.
He
wrote
so
it down on a piece of paper
and then handed it to me in the elevator.
The only other one I think I have is in terms of the position is Brock Holt. Brock Holt has to play, has to start, right?
I don't know though, Rob. You look at what he's given them off the bench, and you're just talking about how much they're going to use this opener thing at catcher. They're going to need to go to a pinch hitter in the middle of a game. I mean, maybe Holt's more valuable to them coming off the bench.
Maybe.
I mean, Cora went out of his way. After Sunday's game, to say, "Oh, Moreland, what a great job Moreland did hitting one off the wall." So
you have a lefty hitter in Holt, and say that you would hit against a righty pitcher, And so the other lefty hitters would be two guys, Moreland and Swihart, right?
Well, Moreland's going to be starting.
Or maybe he's Pierce is playing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just think that you got to get – I don't disagree with you, but I just think that Holt is like their best hitter right now. He's been their best hitter, so you got to get him as many at-bats as possible.
I mean, it's a tough righty. You could honestly see him at second base.
Yeah, no. Well, how about first base?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I feel like they're going to play
more. Moreland's a guy – I said this on the award-winning Nesson show yesterday, I think, that Moreland was the guy who I thought was going to be one of these guys that like emerges out of nowhere and has like the big hit that we don't see.
Yeah, I mean, he was big last year in the playoffs.
Yeah. John, you've been quiet.
I got nothing.
What are you doing over there?
I was just trying to look. I was trying to look up a stat.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to look up a stat.
How about you, Nick?
I would go with
you. Hope. Also have been amazingly quiet.
You guys have been going.
I'm locked in.
Yeah, you guys are locked in.
We're not going to mess with you two talking. You were going
blind.
I would start Brock Holt at second base pretty much no matter what at this point.
You would?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I'm leaning. That's why I was just trying to look up Kinsler. It's like ever since Kinsler had that hamstring, he came out so hot in like the two games before he hurt himself, and he has not been the same player.
He had one little stretch, like when we were in Atlanta around that time.
Oh, who can forget?
Most memorable game.
I had
of the
a
season.
Great interview with him. That's rare.
Just ride Holt till he's done though, because that's how he is.
But you would bring Kinsler in at the end of the game.
Well, here's the question: I don't have the metrics, but is like Kinsler moving around defensively as well as he was when they first got him? Because if he's not giving them that elite defense,
I think he's still better in Holt at second base.
Yeah, he is. No questions asked.
Whose phone is that? Okay.
Keep turning it off. I don't know what's happening.
So popular.
All right. So let's go definitively. Ian, you start Holt or no? Where would you play?
Holt in that bench role, honestly.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the regular.
Okay. Regular one. Nick.
Start him till he slows down.
Start him till he slows. At second, first?
Second.
Second.
100%. Yeah, I'm with Nick on this one. I would start him at second.
Okay.
I feel like Holt's that guy. He's great until you ask too much of him.
Okay.
Exactly. That's why you go till he slows down.
Okay. Last one. Third base. John, who's playing third base?
I'm going Devers. I mean,
no matter what.
Yeah, I know the defense is a huge concern, but he showed enough offensively towards the end of the season where you say upside. We were talking about Bobby Pointer's upside. Devers has got the highest upside.
Right. Well, you know? I mean, home runs play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
We saw it last year.
We saw it from him last year.
Right. He was, what, two home runs? And
that was great when they played Marrero in game two.
Oh, my goodness. It's like
that's probably
that,
not going to happen.
That is, we talk about lessons learned in the postseason.
That was the worst move. John Farrell, that was the worst movie
ever
made.
But that shows you, like, that should be the reminder that postseason is different. Like, when you were facing, was it Dallas Keuchel? That's who he's facing.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a player have less of a chance in a bat than Devin Marrero did.
It was bad.
Nick, who are you starting at third?
I just don't, John, I don't understand how you can trust Rafael Devers in any situation in the field, though. Like, it's one thing off the bench. It's totally, like, that's totally fine. But he is the worst infielder in all of baseball. He leads the league in errors. And he didn't even play a full season.
But in the words of VOSD, he gets to more balls.
Was he on the DL three? I think he was on the DL three times.
Yeah.
And he still led the majors in errors.
No, he was actually second in errors.
Oh, he finished second?
Yeah, he finished second.
He's efficient.
Yes.
I thought he had that locked up.
No, I looked it up the other day.
I saw it tied at 24. I assume the other guy didn't make an error.
I'll tell you. Keep talking. Go ahead.
I say they're going to go, though. I think the classic lefty-righty platoon at third. You know, Devers will start against righties, and Nunez will start against lefties.
I love Cora's, like, going through, like, the things that Nunez did, and it's amazingly he can walk at the end of the season.
That was pretty funny.
it was just...
I'll give
that's
you this.
The other issue. Nunez isn't a great defender either, so...
But here's the difference, is that Nunez... Look at this. I'm like... I'm doing this in perfect form. Nunez will make every routine play.
Except that one.
Except the one in New York, which was designated as the worst defensive play of the season.
Yeah.
But he'll make every routine play. And that's the play that Devers doesn't make a lot of times.
Not
right?
always.
Right.
I'm betting on the upside. I like the offensive upside for Devers. That's
he made a great play the other day, too.
Like if Nunez is hitting like 225 in the course of like the first two games or whatever, or if they make it out of the first series and he's still hitting 225, something like that, then I would entertain the idea of Devers because you can only sacrifice offense so much. I'm willing to do that at the catcher's position every single day. If Jackie Bradley's doing fine, then maybe you can get away with it, but we don't know necessarily what's going to happen there. But Devers is I mean, when you look at Nunez, I get it, the second base defense, he was awful, but completely different guy at third base, John.
He's fine, but I mean, I don't
he's
think
better
he's,
than fine.
He's not, I don't think he's,
wow,
better,
he's better
than
fine.
I think he's fine.
Nick's kind of feisty.
I think he's fine at third base and for the offensive difference
and, a long day today
and the power
average.
Difference. You know, I'm willing to roll the dice there.
He took
especially
an Uber
since
from the airport to get here.
Oh, that's impressive.
I changed my flight to get here from Chicago.
You said that was...
No, it had nothing to do with it. I was kidding.
Oh, really?
No, I'm kidding right now. This had nothing to do with it.
You're lying. You want to be here for this podcast.
I did want to be here, and it worked out in the end.
Well, who would you have called in if Nick couldn't be here?
Nobody.
Okay.
Can't replace me.
No. I did ask Evan because I feel like he could yell it like a... make fun of him and pull things and embarrass
him. You didn't want to do it?
Yell at him for no reason?
No, he has the TV thing.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
Is that show still on?
His job.
Whatever. I don't know what show he's on, so I guess it is.
Okay,
yes,
I didn't know that.
It's good. Yeah, I'm not.
Is he still right?
No.
When they stopped having John on consistently.
At the best slide.
Yeah, that's true.
So listeners out there will very be consumed by this, is that Evan is the only human being, honestly, the only human being I've ever seen have these shields on his phone and his computer, like where you can't see. You've seen him, right? You look at me like I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
On his phone and on his computer screen.
It's tinted.
So you can't read it?
You can't read it unless you're like right in front of it.
The phone thing's
not
that
weird. And is that purely
weird.
Defensive?
Yeah, like, just want anybody to see what's on the screen.
The phone thing's not that weird. That's a millennial thing, as much as I hate to say it. The computer thing. Oh yeah, I've seen it. I've seen girls that have it. Plenty of people that have it. Yeah.
And the idea is just so you can't see your phone.
Exactly, because they don't want people creeping on them and stuff like that.
Okay.
Exactly.
But Ian had the great line. What did you say, Ian?
Tell me what I said.
Oh, you said like it's for all those stories he doesn't write anymore. Yeah. So
Evan, even in absentia,
he loves it. Yeah. So anyway, he's not here, but I'm glad, Nick, you made it from Chicago. So, Ian, we didn't get your Devers Nunez take.
Yeah, no, I said we're going to platoon.
Oh, platoon. Yeah. Okay.
You weren't listening, but he did say.
Oh, all right. Sorry. All right. So we've saw, and I'll give my take. I think they are going to go with the platoon. I think they like Nunez too much, but I think that Nunez will probably be injured by the time if you do get in the second round. That's just a reality of, yeah. I mean, it's just true. It's just, I think that.
That's a fair take.
I like watching Nunez play, like, not so much this year. I mean, he's.
Great last year.
But here's
he was their best player last year.
Right. Oh, no.
Cora said it in spring training to us.
Think about that. Is that, like, Cora said, like, we had two game plans, one with Eduardo Nunez in it and one without Eduardo Nunez. Like, that's how much he meant. That's how, I want to say battle lineup it was, but, like, ineffectual lineup it was.
They were very good, but, yeah, it's kind of how bad that lineup was last year. They were just
Not to take too deep a dive into his issues this year, besides the leg thing and the knee thing. Like, he's a guy I do think hey, try this launch angle thing. And it was like, maybe tried it for a couple, and it was a disaster. It was like, all he does is hit, like, ground balls or line drives and swings at the first pitch. It was, yeah, anyway, so. All right, so I know you guys got to get going. Even if you don't have to get going, I'm going to get you out of here. Thank you for coming in.
Boom sauce.
Well, no, hold on. I'm not finished.
Boom sauce.
I took some time at Starbucks in North Beverly to go through these
stats.
Can you
do it like Rob does it?
No.
Boom sauce.
Yeah. Is that?
That's not very good.
I have different versions of
very
it.
Good.
My postseason boom sauce. It is catching like fire. It's crazy.
I've seen the retweets.
Yes, I have too.
Yeah. Well, I gave you a t-shirt. You got to do one.
I just did one.
You did?
Just now. I just
No, you have to do a video.
You got to do the video.
You have to tweet out a video.
Did Ian do two?
Yeah, he did. He's done a lot for. He's been Clubhouse Insider.
He's done a lot for the station, yeah.
Yes, he's done a lot for the station.
I'll do one from the park tomorrow. How's that?
Okay.
On Tuesday, I'll do one from the park.
John doesn't have to do anything.
I'm going to burst into the booth and yell at him.
You got to do some hobo life.
So here are some things that I just, like, as I'm sitting there, just like, because I'm like, yeah, the season's over. No one's paying attention. The season's over. The regular season's over. All these things that we sort of like saying at the beginning of the year, like the not so special section, like predictions and everything else. So JD Martinez ended up playing 57 games in the outfield. Is that less or more than you thought?
More coming into the year. But once they started and Cora And Martinez made it clear how important it was that he played, that I'm surprised that number wasn't closer.
It
to
went
like
way down in the second half,
yeah.
Didn't it?
It did, yeah. Once they got Steve Pierce at like some of the alignment stuff, it wasn't as easy to play him in the outfield anymore.
So they also had three catchers play at least 80 games. Leon, 89, Swihart, 82, Vasquez, 80. I don't really know what to comment on it. I just thought that was interesting. You don't usually have three catchers playing 80 games.
Yeah, Roger, I mean, Roger LaFrançois really. Would have gotten a lot more playing. Would have gotten a lot more playing time on the
1982.
Mitch Moreland, 459 plate appearances, and the reason I surface that is because what was Hanley? What did Hanley have to get to?
Oh, yeah, it was 496.
No, it's 479 or
497,
like
I think.
Yeah, 497. Yeah, that's yeah, what yeah. it was. So Mitch Moreland hit 459. So Hanley clearly wouldn't have gotten there.
No.
Unless he could
remember
catch.
The 2020 conversation? No team has had, or one, or
yes.
two teams had
yeah,
like.
Yeah, he wanted the, like six 2020 guys or something.
Yeah, so it was like, he's like, we have four guys that could do 2020. Okay, well.
Yeah, Hanley was one of them, so
yeah.
kiss him goodbye.
Hanley said he was going to be 30-30
yes,
in spring training.
Right. Stole a base in Tampa the first series. Stolen bases, so you only had two guys that hit 20 or managed 20. Betts had 30, Benintendi 21, Bradley at 17, Bogarts only 8.
So yeah, Bogarts, that's surprising.
Yeah, yeah, Bogarts is always goes in, I'm going to steal more bases, I'm going to steal more
yeah,
bases.
But you know what? That was smart because he's worn down the last like however many years, and yeah. then this year he was actually much better in the second
Try
half.
Try to hit home yeah, runs.
Big steal a third that night, though.
Who could forget?
That's right.
Home runs. Home runs, Betts 32, Bogarts 23, Bradley 13, Benintendi 16.
Bradley 13, that's much lower than I thought.
Yeah, but he was had like one 3 weeks
ago. When he started it, he was...
to get, he got his OPS over 700. Yeah. That's an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
So J.D. Martinez, going back to J.D. Martinez, he had the highest batting average of balls in play in the majors, 375. What's that mean to you? Anything?
I would have to look to see, is that a year-after-year thing with him, or is it an outlier year this
well,
year?
Well, if you look at it, he's one of the, not the top guy, but one of the top guys when it comes to hard-hit balls, barrel balls.
You look at the way he's trending the last 2 years. I mean,
well,
yeah, it certainly didn't feel like he had too many cheap hits.
Here's an interesting one for him, though. Lowest fly ball percentage since 2012. Highest ground ball percentage of his career. So, didn't hit the ball in the air as much as he probably would have liked, even though he hit.
He hit 330.
The guys are pitching him too. That's the other.
Well, I noticed. So that's what's going to be interesting to me in the postseason. In the last 2 months, I feel like pitchers have taken a dramatic turn how they pitch him. Mm-hmm. I mean, and he's still hit for average, but you've seen what the home runs have done. I mean, you have the home run on Sunday, which is I asked a great question.
Yeah, I was just saying you were the one who told him the other day he wasn't hitting any home runs anymore.
I was. No, I didn't.
Oh,
did
you
I?
Didn't ask that?
No.
No, he was that's he was telling Erod, the guy. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Somebody after the game was telling JD he hadn't been hitting any home runs lately.
Oh, that sounds like Johnny Miller.
Yes. Yeah. We often get mixed up. So remember the whole thing about swing at the first pitch, Mookie Betts going to be aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
didn't
last.
Do it. No, lowest swing at first pitch 9.8% last year is at 12.1, year before 17.8.
So he swung at the first pitch more last year?
No. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes,
wow, that seems impossible.
Yes.
But Bogarts is one who that number yes. must have changed quite a bit.
Pitches taken, Mookie Betts exactly the same as he was last year, 64%.
I'm curious what that swing at first pitch strike percentage was after like the month of April, because it's probably even...
Yeah.
Because he did it all in the first like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Episode 94. Mookie Betts, so like I said, exactly the same. Pitches taken exactly the same as last year, 64%. So that sort of didn't change at all. His ground ball rate did go from 40 to 34, so he wasn't hitting as many ground balls. And then the aforementioned pop time. So great research by me.
J.D. Martinez, by the way,
yeah.
is lifetime batting average on balls in play, 347. So he's just one of those outlier guys who's
always... So what's that mean to you?
Alex Speer.
I know, but that's,
yeah,
I
mean,
I
he hits a lot of
mixed...
line drives.
Wasn't Ortiz like that, too? Balls in play, wasn't he?
No, because he was
I would
opposite.
Think the shift
he was the
would
opposite.
Kill him.
Oh, the shift,
the shifts
yeah.
killed him.
Without the shift, he
See, I always get it mixed up.
You don't
I'm
shift
with you.
J.D.
I always
Martinez,
get it
you know? So I don't know. Like,
shows that, yeah, shifts are just not as effective against
well,
him,
Well, so I was looking up, so throughout baseball, like league totals, and the takeaway I had for the entire league was that the hitters don't know what they're doing, honestly. there were less home runs than last year. There were far more strikeouts. The batting average was the lowest it's been in like 40 years. It was like league average was 245 or something like that. And this, nobody steals base, even tries to steal bases anymore. And so
they're trying to adjust, though, Rob.
I agree. I totally agree with you. Well, I think that's the takeaway. Pitchers win.
Yep.
Pitchers win this year.
Yeah, like I was surprised when I was going through my for MVP, you got to pick 10 guys.
Oh yeah. That's
when I was going through my ballot, it was hard to find 10 guys who were like deserved to be in the conversation. It was hard to find.
What do you say? So only four guys were 900 OPS.
It was either four or five guys in the whole AL who had an OPS of 900 or higher.
But if you had the whole
because baseball's
you know propping up like these guys, dynamic players and everything this year, but. Pitchers won. Pitchers, this is what Porcello said earlier in the year, that the pitchers had to adjust, and he was one of these guys, is that he had to adjust to what the hitters were doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that they did, judging by those numbers.
They've been doing it for a while because I know with Matt Barnes, it was 2 years ago, I remember talking to him and Carl Willis about it, and I don't think Carl Willis was particularly a good pitching coach, but they were way ahead of the curve when it came to dealing with guys who are low ball hitters, and that's what the best hitters in baseball are right now. Like Mike Trout, case in point right there, he loves the low ball. You don't throw him anything down there, and you throw everything up in the zone, and that's what Porcello does now too with that four-seamer. He was always a sinker ball guy. He doesn't just rely on that now, and I think that's where everybody else is kind of adjusting, well, so, working at the top of the zone.
Yeah, and also the other thing that was a big takeaway was what Core talks about a lot is that the lineup construction, which is leadoff. You look at leadoff hitters, like the stolen base attempts are like nothing. Right. And obviously
everyone plays for
and also the number two hitter. You look at that game in Milwaukee, where's the MVP of the league hitting?
Yeah, exactly. Where that was judged last year. You know?
Yeah, so the MVP of the league this in the American League is hitting first. The MVP of the National League is hitting second. Like you said, the guy who is one of the best home run hitters is hitting second. So yeah, it's totally changed. And then the Red Sox, you look at the cleanup hitter.
Yeah,
you know, no slight to Xander Bogaerts, but you know, is he a cleanup hitter in the old days?
You would think of J.D. Martinez as like your prototypical,
but you don't do that anymore. Anyway, is there anything else you guys want to get to?
The one thing we didn't cover is Chris Sale. I mean,
oh, we didn't.
That's the biggest thing.
I mean, that's almost the one where it's like, yeah, if that doesn't happen, then they're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, this game one is going to be the most.
Well, let's go around the room. Yes or no? What we saw in his last start is at least a semblance of the byproduct of the shoulder thing.
Injury. Yes, 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 yes. I mean, I'm not only am I not confident in Chris Sale, I wouldn't even be thinking of re-signing Chris Sale. Like you're based on how the last couple of years have gone, really almost every year of his career. You're going to bet on him becoming more durable as he gets into his 30s, and you give him $200 to $300 million. Sorry, you already did that with David Price. You screwed that up once. You don't do it again.
I agree.
I'm getting a little bit ahead of the game, but yeah,
Nick.
I don't necessarily look at him more as a byproduct of him being hurt. I think he was worn down, like everybody else gets in the course of a season. I think that they babied him too much, and now they're trying to get him to. They said it was, a mechanical flaw.
Is he worn down or is he not worn down?
No, he's worn down
from what?
From
150 innings.
From his career,
from the natural wear and tear that he deals with every single year, and he does not handle it as well as a Porcello or a David Price does. Okay. But what I'm saying is I don't think all of this is a byproduct of his shoulder being hurt, because we saw what happened in that first game back. He came out like gangbusters, and he was hitting 100 every other pitch, right?
One in Baltimore, I mean.
Exactly. And I understand it's against the Orioles, but I'm looking at just his velocity in that game. That tells me how his shoulder's feeling. But
wait, the one in Baltimore where he had to go back on the DL?
Yes.
But that was before.
But they didn't need him, Robin, and they go in. I have from day one felt that this is way more than they've made
how
it out
does,
to be.
How does when you and Alex?
Wait, way less than they've made
Alex
out to be.
Alex did a good
me.
Thing on the extension, everything the else.
Yeah,
but how does and you can talk about mechanics. I have a hard time getting my head around that. Anything mechanically is going to cause 8 miles an hour to drop off.
Yeah, it's like we were hearing there was a Pomerantz the entire season. You know, nothing's wrong with Pomerantz.
How do you explain what happened earlier in the year when Chris Sale was not throwing as hard as he was in July? Because he was like a completely different pitcher. And I remember talking to guys on opposing teams.
Earlier in the year?
Earlier in the year.
He wasn't throwing 90.
He He wasn't throwing 100 though, Rob. How do you explain
he was throwing,
a 5 mile an hour difference?
He was getting it up to 97. Look it up. He was getting up to 97, 98, even at his worst velocity outing.
John, are you looking it up right now?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well,
okay, he was getting it, but there's a difference between getting it up to 97 and sitting at 97.
That but he wasn't. He got it up to 94. He got it up to 94.
I understand if
he can locate, he still can win with the stuff.
No, I agree with.
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
That I agree with.
But he's not. But I don't know if he's going to be the same guy necessarily. And if there's a mechanical flaw, Rob, and he's taking it easy because I don't, or trying to push the envelope, whatever, getting out of the rhythm that he was in, I think they made a mistake. That's with that second DL stint. I don't think he needed to get
keep this tape handy. Sale's going to win game 1-6-2. That's going to be the final game.
All right, there you go. You're pissing on your territory.
Sale through 93.
I'll tell you what, though.
April, by the
way. What did he say?
He was 93 in April, then 96 in May. And then,
average.
Yeah, I'm just going average four seam velocity. 93, 96. 97,
but one of those,
98.
One of those games,
98. That's a 5 mile an hour difference.
Hold on, one of those games was like a freezing cold game. Remember that?
No,
game?
I'm going. I'm just giving you month by month. Right. So April it was 93, May 96,
which was one of those cold games.
Yeah,
that dropped it down. That's when the closest he's come to this.
I'm just saying. So, but he threw 98 in his cold, you know, two or three starts in August.
Yeah,
and then 92 in September.
All right, so whatever. I mean,
so 92 in September versus 93, and he was sitting 98 beforehand.
Listen, the bottom line. Is it we until Friday? This is impossible to tell. Like I know that you know he threw a flat ground on Monday, but we don't know. We have no idea until and you know what the power cortisone is very real thing.
I'll tell you what if they face.
Have you ever had cortisone?
I have never had a cortisone.
Oh,
shot.
I heard it's awesome.
I would have loved to get one on my elbow.
We're gonna get one for you before the next media game.
I kind of want it. Yeah,
I wouldn't be opposed to it. I mean, I can't mess up what's messed up there already anymore.
Go ahead. No one cares.
If they you were talking about
no,
it. You
no, go.
Let's just rewind. Have you ever had a cortisone shot? No, I never have, but I would love. No one cares.
Thank you, John. If they face the A's and Sale looks like he has in September, I would rather see David Price go out for Game 5.
Really?
Game 2 and Game 5. Yep, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm very confident David Price won't make it to Game 5. Not at Yankee Stadium.
No,
anywhere else, I'm confident in David Price.
Well,
right
Game
now.
5 wouldn't be at Yankee Stadium.
That's a good point. But
thank you.
That's a good point.
I've been studying the schedule.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for coming in, everybody. This is a pleasure.
Great time.
Boom sauce.
You drank like 5 beers. It's incredible. You managed to give the impression that you're all sober. It's amazing.
That's what makes us professional sports
guys. Right. Got us the light stuff.
All right, we'll do it again before the postseason rolls around or rolls up or something.
Rolls over.
We'll do it again at some point. We'll do it
between maybe between now and the LCS.
You think so? I think I want to do it before that. Now I get the T-shirts. Right. I'm sort of feeling a lot of momentum.
All right, whatever.
Would you listen to this podcast today?
Oh, yeah.
We haven't talked about the hats yet.
What? The flap brim?
Yeah.
How's it look?
It looks great.
I feel
on
like
you.
Compliments my glasses.
You know what? You should have a poll with this podcast. Does your flat brim more look more like, who'd you say, Jasper Parnevik?
Yeah, Jasper Parnevik.
Or Ricky Fowler? Who does Rob look more
That's
like?
That's not my
That's not Rob's poll.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
See ya.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America, decade by decade, from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.